It's time for conversations about our food and how it's grown on Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.
Does Farm to Table Talk apply to minimalism? And you know what?
That's what I'm trying to figure out, Roger. You're the one that asked me to be on the show, man. No, I'm kidding.
I'm going to be a minimalist and give minimal introduction to my guest from the minimalist, Ryan Nicodemus. Ryan, welcome to Farm to Table Talk.
Hey, man, thanks for having me. That was a very minimal introduction. Man.
I know.
Good.
You know, I listen to some of these.
You don't want to talk. You don't want to talk about how I've been on the Today Show and in the New York Times and. No, I dig it, man. I dig it.
No, you can go back and say all that stuff. I listen to podcasts all the time, and they say, here's my guest. And then they go on and on and on. And I thought, well, okay, we'll cover that. And then I thought this was kind of a shortcut that you call yourself minimalist.
Yeah.
And you are. And you know what? I got to start off with saying that I really like listening to you guys. And I stumbled
across you,
and I'm listening all the time. And I'm just kind of amazed at what you do and who all's following you and how people almost seem like they're reinventing you every time. You're talking to people that are asking questions, and it's kind of like they find in you whatever they're looking for. I don't know if that makes sense, but, you know, when you say...
I just think that, you know, Josh and I, we have a story that... And it's two different stories that we both kind of went on this journey together. But, you know, for all intents and purposes, we have two different stories. But at the end of the day, I mean, there are things there that people can relate to. It's funny, I think there was an article that had come out. I forget what paper outlet it was, but they were talking about, the gospel of minimalism. And, you know, at the end of the day, like, we are not trying to convert anyone to being a minimalist. That's not even possible, you know, via the definition of conversion. But what I'll say is that Josh and I have two recipes that people, they may not be able to replicate that same exact recipe, but there's certainly something there, I think, for everyone. There are some ingredients that people can tweeze out. And I've never had anyone word it that way, Roger, about, you know, people kind of seeing us what they want to see in us or what they see in themselves. And I think you hit the nail on the head.
Yeah, you know, you guys are like in Indianapolis and you're in Cincinnati and then you're somewhere else and you show up and you do a podcast and then you say, well, let's just start. You know, you don't talk a long time. And then you get people coming up to a microphone and asking you questions. And they're just, like, going on about how excited they are to see you. And then the question they ask you, it's like there's no wrong answer from you. I mean, they've come to see you, and they see something in it, and they hear something that just seems just what they're looking for. And, it's quite a phenomenon.
It's a huge honor. It's a huge honor to be a role model, I got to tell you. I take it very seriously.
Yeah, well, and, you know, the thing is that we got to back up here now, and we're going to let you do a little bit more introduction. Because I know enough about your story that I've heard you talk about before. You both were in Dayton, Ohio, I believe.
Yeah.
You both had some sort of, you know, soul-sucking kind of business experiences that, you know, like, there's got to be something better than this, which right off the bat, probably half the population can relate to the feeling that at one time in their life or another.
I remember growing up and money... just always being a source of discontent. And I'm sure there are a lot of people out there listening to this who can relate with the same thing. And I remember just thinking to myself when I graduated high school, I'm like, man, if I could just find a way to make $50,000 a year, I won't have that burden. And I will be, I'll be financially set. I can get the house I want. Now, first off, that tells you how old I am. What, $50,000 a year got you anything? Nice. But you know, it also wasn't Dayton, Ohio. So it went a lot further back in, you know, the late 90s, early 2000s, the early aughts, I guess the aughts is what they're calling them now. But I went out, I got a sales job and started making $50,000 a year, but I wasn't happy. I was confused. Something went wrong. I had to go back to the drawing board, and thank goodness, like, I figured out what had happened. I just had to adjust for inflation is what I finally figured out. And then I thought to myself, I'm like, well, maybe, you know, $65,000 a year, maybe that's happiness, or or maybe 90,000 or six figures. And it got to a point where, yes, I like had everything I ever wanted. I had everything I was supposed to have. And it's really crazy, man. Like, if you would have told my 18-year-old self what my 28-year-old self was going to have, I would have been the most excited 18-year-old. But, you know, when I turned 28 and I had all that stuff, I wasn't happy. I was miserable. I was discontented. I may have made a lot of money, but I spent a lot of money. And on top of that, to live this, you know, extravagant lifestyle that I was working 60, 70, sometimes 80 hours a week, forsaking some of the most important aspects of my life. I mean, I never thought about my health or my relationships or things I was passionate about. And, you know, worst of all, I was stagnant. I wasn't growing. I definitely wasn't contributing. And I was just kind of in this tornado of a lifestyle. And I was using a lot of pacifiers. I drank a lot every single night, just getting, you know, passed out drunk, racking up $300 bar tabs. I was doing drugs a lot. I mean, I was just using as many pacifiers as I could. And I just got to a point in my life where something had to change. And that is when I noticed this change in Joshua, my best friend of 20-something years. You know, we've been friends since we were fat little fifth graders. And he seemed happy for the first time in a really long time. So I sat him down and I just asked him, like, what is going on with you, man? Why the hell are you so happy? And that's when he introduced this thing to me called minimalism, where he talked about how he spent the last several months of his life simplifying, paring down, making room for life's most important things. And then he introduced me to an entire community of minimalists who were doing the same thing. And
You mean minimalism existed before you guys invented it?
Yeah, man. I think you can go back to the Stoics and find some minimalist roots, or any religious text. You could find some minimalist roots there too. But cool thing about all these people is that they were all living, you know, for all intents and purposes, different lifestyles. Like one guy, his name was Colin Wright. He traveled the world every 4 months, or moving to a new country every 4 months, traveling the world, carrying with him everything that he owned. I thought that was cool, but I didn't want to be that peripatetic writer. But then I looked up, you know, so I started looking up to people like Leo Babauta, who had six kids with him and his wife, six kids living in San Francisco. There's a gal named Courtney Carver, 40-year-old wife and mother to a teenage daughter in Salt Lake City. And no one had the same exact life, but they all used this thing called minimalism to live a deliberate lifestyle. And I thought, yes, this makes sense to me. If I don't have this huge mortgage hanging over my head, if I'm not buying a new car every 2 years, if I don't go out and rack up all this credit card debt, maybe I won't have to work 80 hours a week. So, you know, that's when I jumped on board. I'm like, all right, I want to be a minimalist. I'm in.
You know what? This reminds me. I was looking this morning at your website again. And everybody should check it out. Go to the minimalist. Actually, does this have an apostrophe S on the end of it or just S?
Nope. Minimalist.com.
Okay, minimalist.com. So it's a great website. And you got all this stuff going on, where you are, what your shows are, and so forth. But I was looking at it this morning, and a strange thing popped into my head. Have you ever heard of this musical from years and years ago called Stop the World, I Want to Get Off?
I have not.
Okay, well, it was way back, way, way, way back. And there was Anthony Newley wrote it, and there was some good music in it. It only went anywhere, but I don't know why it popped in my mind. And so I looked it up online. I did a Google on Stop the World, I Want to Get Off, because it's kind of seems like it wouldn't be a bad title for your musical at one stage of your life and some of the other people in a way. And it originated from graffiti. And that term, was often evidently some of the early form graffiti that was scrawled around on walls and alleys and streets and stuff. Stop the world, I want to get off. And then the other little jump in thought on this that I was thinking, why does farm to table talk apply to minimalism? And you know what?
That's what I'm trying to figure out, Roger. You're the one that asked me to be on the show, man. No, I'm kidding.
Well, you know what? I guess the thing is, think about this for a second. I like my show, obviously. I have conversations with people I'm interested in. So I like my show. I like Farm to Table Talk. Mm-hmm. And you've mentioned to me Your partner likes my show. She listens to Farm to Table Talk sometimes.
And
she likes your show too. So why do people like us find anything in common with minimalism and Farm to Table? And I think one of it is that I think there's a lot of people in food and agriculture that have kind of similar journeys. They either decided that they don't want the same rat race, they don't want to have a great big farm, or they're doing something they don't really want to do. They'd really like to be outdoors. They'd like to grow things. They'd like to maybe go to the Congo and help farmers, you know, raise cocoa beans or something. Mm-hmm. But there's some element of both getting rid of stuff and minimalizing, but it's also a little bit of follow your bliss. So we might be able to mix in lots of philosophies before we're done.
Yeah, I think the reason why people will listen to your podcast and my podcast, I think, you know, maybe the synecdoche there is being very deliberate and the act of doing things intentionally. Because, you know, not just with, in my world, you know, Josh and I speak to mass consumption and hoarding and, you know, tiny homes. But in your world, you know, it's about mass production of food. Mm-hmm. And doing things in a very unintentional way that isn't healthy for our culture. And I think, you know, even that, the health part of it, where, you know, maybe Josh and I address this mental health part when it comes to our world around us, especially the Western world around us, and you kind of address that physical health part, especially in the Western world.
That's right, because it does get into also waste and greenhouse gases and nutrition. Mm-hmm. Are you taking in more calories and more packaging, or you're doing things that don't give any satisfaction?
There's a lot of overlap for sure. Yeah, especially that's a good point on the environment. I totally agree with that.
Yeah. Well, let's do pick on your partner. Actually, you could run in the house and grab her if you want at some stage. If you don't, but like in her case, why does she look at things like that, like Farm to Table Talk, or why is she interested in how her food is grown and so forth?
So, God love Mariah. I would get her, but I'm actually away from the house right now, walking around. I've got some workers in there doing some stuff, but she has had gut issues, microbiome issues for the last 3 years, 2.5 years. And, you know, it was just, we were together for a year and a half. We eat whatever we wanted. We drink whatever we wanted. And we live generally healthy lifestyles. But then all of a sudden, she just started having some really crazy digestive issues. And she went to go get some tests done, and they kept telling her she had IBS, IBS is, I don't know, man, I'm not a doctor.
Irritated bowel syndrome or something like that?
Yes, but it, to me, is a symptom.
Oh, right, right.
Of an actual problem that's going on.
Right.
And we through diet and through, you know, trial and error, we have discovered some things that she definitely can't eat. So I think, and the more organic she eats, the fresher foods that she eats, she feels better as well. So I think podcasts like yours and other food podcasts out there, she's very interested in, because she is just trying to take in as much knowledge as possible, because she still doesn't have this thing figured out yet.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, just like anyone, when they're trying to, you know, really drill in on a problem and figure out the right answers, they take in as much information as possible. And certainly your podcast would fall under some, you know, pretty good information that she could use to help guide her quest and figuring out what's going on.
Well, she's certainly the kind of person that I hope listens. It's people that care about how their food is grown, that care about food, care about the environment, care about sustainability. And again, really care to know what are the choices the farmer's making. And that is something that you're going to find very available to you out in Los Angeles now. I mean, you know, you guys took a journey kind of like I did in a way. I grew up in the Midwest and moved to the mountain states and then moved to California. But I've been ahead of you by like 25 years. But you in the Midwest, you went to the mountain states, and now you're in California too.
No, I'm in California. Yeah, man. No, I'm loving it out here. No, I totally agree, man. L.A., The way I see this city is it will give you whatever you want, but yeah. you have to be really, really deliberate with what you want. And certainly the food options out here, the healthy food options out here are certainly plentiful.
Yeah, so what are you doing? I mean, how does it compare so far? You've been out there, what, a month or so? Or
not even that, man. No, you know what? I don't really have a good grasp on it right now, man. I mean, I moved out. So Mariah and I got out here on the 18th of September. I was here for 2 days. I went on a wave of our tour. We did New York City. We had 3 stops in New York City. We had a stop in Philadelphia. And then I just got back on, so 2 days ago. So I haven't even really been here for, hardly 4 days. So I can tell you that I have found, like, my most favorite restaurant in L.A. so far. Now, I have eaten at plenty of restaurants here because Josh and I have either been here on tour or we've had a speaking engagement. So I've eaten at probably, 100 restaurants here in L.A. And the other day, Mariah and I found this amazing restaurant. So, yes, food is, like, very easy to come by, and amazing food is very easy to come by. Other than that, man, I'm still getting used to the traffic and the weather, and, I thought I'd be able to walk everywhere, but it turns out that this is pretty much a driving city.
Yeah. Did you ever see L.A. Story, the movie?
I did not.
Oh, go see it. There's something else you got to look up, but you got to see L.A. Story. It's a classic. It was with Steve Martin, and it's so funny. It's kind of a spoof on living in Los Angeles, but at one stage they show him walking out of his house and getting in his car and driving in front of the house right next door to him and getting out of his car and going to see his girlfriend that lived in the house next door, but he drove to her house, mm-hmm. and that's kind of like, like L.A. is such a car-oriented place.
Right.
And then everything takes, I mean, there's nothing that's less than 45 minutes. You just got to plan on getting in the car and,
and going.
But it's great for podcasts. You do.
Yeah.
Hey, go back to that restaurant that you guys had. You want to put a plug in for it?
Oh,
or just
sure,
describe
man.
It?
Yeah. I'll absolutely recommend it. It's called AOC, and that's an acronym. I don't know what it stands for.
Uh-huh.
But it is on 3rd Street, close to 3rd and Robertson. It's like very intentional food. They pair things really well. Like when they brought out, so right now Mariah and I are trying to do this ketogenic diet.
Mm-hmm.
So we were trying to, order stuff that was as ketogenic as possible. They brought out this cheese plate with some kind of like pork pate thing going on, and then just some vegetables, and then maybe a couple little pickles, but it was just like the perfect amount of food, the perfect pairing. And then when we had our like main course, Mariah had some kind of chicken salad, I had a pork belly salad, and it was just fantastic. And you can just tell that the food is very well prepared. The pairing is very intentional, and the flavors are razor sharp. I mean, and when I say razor sharp, I mean like they're just like spot on. Like there's nothing, maybe you add a little bit of salt or something to it, but it really doesn't even need that. It's just
you're making me hungry.
Right on the dot.
Did they happen to describe where any of their ingredients came from? Did they list any farms or say anything about production?
You know what? They absolutely did. I could not tell you what any of the farms were.
Sure.
But yes, they definitely do talk about where the food comes from.
Mm-hmm.
The cheeses specifically, it's like they're the whole cheese list, it was here's the type of animal it came from. Here's the country and the county that this animal was in. And and it's from all over the world.
Yeah,
pretty amazing.
I'm guessing.
And then the chef there.
Yeah.
Oh, I was just to say real quick, the chef there. God, I wish I would have written all this down for this podcast. I forget her name, but the waiter was telling me that she's really low key, but like she is. I forget what type of top chef awards she has one that he was rattling off, but you can tell that there's an amazing chef behind that food.
Listen to us, Ryan. We're connecting this to the minimalist again. I mean, you're being really deliberate. You're looking at somebody that's making choices, that's stuff that you're finding that you like, and they're very deliberate about the kind of food they get and how they serve it and how it's balanced and who the chef is and where the farm came from and what the production practices are. That's what we have in common.
That's what we have in common, man. Yeah, that is, and we got a lot more in common than that, man. But no, I think you know, the whole idea of talking about how food is sourced, and like you said, the packaging and where it comes from, how much care the farmer takes of the food, it's all important information to know. And I'll tell you, man, when you have, you know, if I handed you two different hamburgers and one of them was, you know, some grass-fed beef and the other one was just, you know, some store-bought, you know, two-buck chuck, then I guarantee you would be able to tell me the difference.
Yeah.
Because that's how much it matters.
Mariah might have listened to a podcast I had about called The Assembly Restaurant, and they were telling me, they were bragging about the hamburger because it was coming from organic grass-fed cows that were coal cows rather than the ground beef that comes flown in from all over the world and mixed in together. And it was delicious. We ate it and then continued the podcast. This is the best kind of podcasting. You sit down and eat a little bit.
Now you're
and
making
talk.
Me hungry, man.
Hey, you know what? You probably, in your neighborhood, I'll bet you guys are close to like 10 farmers markets within, you know, 15, 20 minutes from your place. It's at one day or another. Have you found any yet? Has Mariah found any yet?
Yeah, she did find a couple, actually. And, yeah, she's really digging them. I forget the name of those exactly.
Well, yeah, tell you
yeah,
one.
She's definitely found a couple.
Let's see, which side of downtown Los Angeles are you living?
We are in, like, West Hollywood, Beverly Hills type area. Yeah.
So you're not far from Santa Monica, then?
No, not far at all.
So the Santa Monica has a farmer's market. This is just like, what I love about this farmer's market, you guys got to go check it out. It's like on Wednesday mornings, I think, or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, anyway, so you got to go out and check it out, because what I like about it is that they, first of all, if you care about whether it's organic or not, they literally fly a flag. So it's it takes, like, I don't know, 5 or 6 blocks long. It makes an X kind of in the downtown Santa Monica or out by the wharf. And you see flags flying if they actually are certified organic. And if they're not, they can still explain everything about it. But you go to the middle of the market, and you can look up any farm you were going to visit there, any of the stands, and it's got all the production practices. I mean, I guarantee you, more than you ever want to know. But you can look and see, this guy uses, you know, such and such, and this is the pesticides that if they have to use any, they use them. And this is what they're doing and why they're doing it. But it's got the history on every single farm and every single food product. So somebody that is, especially like in your case, you're looking out for a health issue, you can research it right there on the spot while you're in there shopping and know everything there is to know about the farm, and then plus ask the farmer, too, the farmer's stand. So I recommend it.
And that's amazing. I hope you put all these recommendations in the show notes, because I will definitely be going back to these.
I aspire to be more like you in show noting. I'm going to start. I don't do much on that, but I'm going to start. And then the only other thing is, two other things I'm going to say when you're down there, and that is, the food truck stuff is just crazy down there. They've got some wild food truck experiences you guys are going to have to take in,
cool.
And then things like Korean tacos, and you know they're really this unique of mixing Asian and Mexican cuisine and flavors, which I don't. It's coming in some other places now, but it's especially in Los Angeles. And then the other thing you might keep in mind is keep an eye out for the LA Food Council. There's like 300 or so people that they show up. And maybe Mariah would like to even go to some of these, because you just show up to them when they announce when they're going to be doing them. But they end up are doing all this stuff of farm to school and community gardens and hydroponics in downtown, you know, and city buildings and stuff like that. There's just a whole bunch of stuff.
That's amazing. Wow. No, I look forward to checking that out.
Well, you know, I want to circle back, obviously, to minimalism, because, again, the one thing I keep that's haunting me as we have this conversation, Ryan, is that you keep talking about, you know, deliberate. You know, you just don't really kind of slide into stuff. I mean, do I really need it? Do I need this stuff? Do I need to take this action? Is it good for me? Is it good for the earth? Is it, you know, all of these things? Maybe that should have been the name as well as minimalism.
Well, you know, we are the minimalists because the domain was available for like $650 on GoDaddy. So, you know, it's funny when Josh and I, so I'm just going to preface the website a little bit more.
Sure.
So when I, you know, when I'm like, Josh, this makes sense to me, you know, this wasn't a magic answer or anything. It was common sense, but there was, you know, kind of these stories I could, or these recipes that I could squeeze ingredients out of and apply to my own life. But, you know, I was talking to Josh when I'm, you know, telling him that I'm on board. I'm like, I don't know what to do right now though, because I don't want to spend months simplifying my life. I mean, that was great for him, but I needed faster results. So we came up with this idea of a packing party where I had packed up all my belongings as if I were moving. So, like, Josh came over, literally helped me box up everything. And we just put it all in my – I had two living rooms. We put it in my second living room, and I had the boxes labeled really well, and I unpacked things as I needed it day by day. And I did that for 3 weeks. And at the end of the 3 weeks, you know, I had the stuff, some toiletries unpacked and kitchen utensils and clothes for work and, you know, the furniture I actually used. But 80% of my stuff was still sitting in those boxes, just sitting there unaccessed. And that was when I, you know, thought to myself, like, wow, this is a cool story. Like, I bet you we could probably share this story and people would really love to hear it. And Josh had been writing some essays and he had his own perspective and story that he was living out. And yeah, we thought, yeah, maybe there are people out there who would love to hear our story. So that's when we decided to start a website. You know, we did what any two 30-year-old dudes would do, Roger. We started a blog. And we called it The Minimalist. So I'll tell you, Josh came to me with that name. He's like, man, you know, I think I've got the domain. It's theminimalist.com. And I was like, dude, I'm like, that is such a cheesy name. He was like, well, he's like, do you have anything better? And I'm like, no, I don't. So that was kind of a that was a placeholder. Now, that was 7 years ago. It was a placeholder. And, you know, now it's been, you know, great because it's a simple name. And people do know us as the Minimalists. But, yeah, the name that we have is – it was simply because the domain was available for us to buy. Roger, we never planned on it being this huge. It just blows my mind.
Well, it's reaching a lot of people. I mean, you're putting something out there that everybody else is going some similar feelings. You know, get back to the food connection too. What I find somehow from listening to you guys, I'm more conscientious about cleaning out my refrigerator. Now, you don't ever really talk about that too much, except that I'm also seeing how much waste there is in the world and how, like, 40% of all the food we grow in America gets thrown away. It's in the field or rots in your refrigerator because you don't get around to actually using it. And you're a nudge, you know. And
yeah, food waste that's one of my biggest pet peeves. I think it's necessary in some ways, meaning, you know, like, if I'm full, I'm not gonna scarf down those last four bites of something. I don't want to waste a paper container to bring it home.
Right.
So, I mean, there are some times where I think it's, you know, I think there's always going to be a little bit of waste, but yeah, I totally agree, man. Like, that's Mariah and I, we try to plan our meals deliberately. We've got a few staple, you know, items, a few meals that we always make at the house, and we know exactly what we're going to eat, how much leftovers we're going to have, and how long it takes me to eat the leftovers, because I'm usually the one that eats the leftovers.
What do you guys like to eat at home?
So we're doing this ketogenic diet, which is basically, you know, kind of a modified Atkins diet.
Right.
So right now, I'll tell you, the first meal we had when I got back from this last wave of our tour, Mariah made just a couple, like, sirloin steaks and some, I want to say collard greens, but they weren't collard greens. They were, or it was char. I think it was char. And what else? Just some mushrooms, and then like just a bunch of garlic cloves in there, roasted with all that. Yeah. And it was very simple, man. And I just couldn't get over how good it was. It was like, it was such a good meal. That's usually what we do, though. I mean, go ahead.
Do you do a glass of wine with that or not?
We did have a glass of wine. I don't typically do a glass of wine every single meal, but yeah, we did have a glass of wine when I came back. Love us a good Pinot Noir. That's kind of our go-to.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that's what we do, though. It's meat and vegetables. So it's you know, meat and cooked vegetables, because Mariah, that's one of the things she's figured out. Cooked vegetables digest a lot easier with her. It makes her feel a lot better.
That's great. Now, you're back in Los Angeles now, and you've come there from Montana, and I look at what all you guys got going on, and it looks from the outside looking in like your life is getting more complicated.
I'm living the dream, dude. Living it. But yeah. Here's the catch. Here's the catch with living the dream. You do work your ass off. And it takes that no matter what. Now, you know, we have this saying in Western society, if you find what you love to do, you never have to work another day in your life. And I'm going to call bullshit on that. I think that is certainly possible. And there's probably someone out there right now, probably someone listening to this podcast, are like, I wake up every day. I don't feel like I have to work. I think that's great, but it's not really, I don't think it's a really reasonable expectation for, you know, all 300 million Americans to have that expectation where they don't feel like they have to work. So we do work hard. I don't want to undermine it, but it is a lot of fun. And at the end of the day, it is such a net positive influence that we're having on the world, that we're having on our lives. We absolutely are willing to put that work in. But yeah, man, if it ever got to a point where we felt so busy and overwhelmed and bogged down and we couldn't do what we felt was most meaningful, then we would take a step back. And we have done that before, actually. When it comes to the podcast commercials, man, it's so funny you said that. We are, this is our first legit tour. Like, we have a booking agent. They get all the venues together. You know, dude, I've got flat and sparkling water in the green room now. It's unbelievable. And it just shows up when I get there. And all I got to do is show up for sound check and then go eat dinner and come back. And Josh and I will do the show, where before Josh and I were doing everything. And it was definitely harder work. But our booking agent, he was like, why don't you guys do podcasts? He's like, you guys could really make a lot of money from that. And I'm like, yeah, we could. You know, I mean, maybe we could make, let's say I can make $3 million. I say $3 million because Dave Ramsey talks about how $3 million in the bank is kind of that magic number where you can live off the interest, live a comfortable life if you got $3 million. So let's say I can get $3 million from advertisements, man. That I would then be the king of who gives a shit, and that is not how I want to live out my life. What Josh and I do now, the way we make money, it's a very genuine way, and we're not selling anything as much as asking for people's support. So yes, we have books, so we certainly sell books, and that's, you know, you've got audio, you've got ebooks, you've got print books. We do speaking engagements, so colleges, they will you know, have us come out, they'll pay us for speaking engagements. We will I've got a mentoring business. If anyone listening needs a mentor, go to theminimalist.com/mentoring or mentor. Either one should work. But my point is that, you know, I've got a whole team of mentors, my personal mentors, who are making and helping people make lasting changes in their lives. So, you know, Josh and I, we don't try to ever just sell something for the sake of it. Anything we do, we absolutely believe is going to add value to someone else's life. So how do we make money? Roger, my father-in-law, I'm going to call him my father-in-law because I've been dating Mariah for like going on 5 years, and we've been living together for 4. But he asked me when I first met him, he's like, what's your business model? I'm like, dude, I don't even want to go over it because it's such a unique business model. Like, A, it can't be replicated. And I really don't sit here and think every day like, okay, how are the book sales doing? How are the mentoring classes doing? How are the speaking engagements going? It's like Josh and I put our best foot forward. And when you put your best foot forward, people want to, not only do they want to share your story and share your message with their friends and family to add value to other people's lives, but they also want to support you. And that's really Josh and I's business model, I guess, is we put our best foot forward, and we have a lot of people who go out of their way to support us.
Well, it's because you're providing something everybody wants. And you know, you have a business model in a way. I mean, Alicia, your business has evolved. I mean, you were doing blogs, And then, and you do podcasts and books and so forth. And now from what I hear, you're talking about getting into a lot more video. So does that just feel like the right new space, that that's a way that you can reach so many more people to start doing video more than you have? You always have done, you've had some video, like the documentary so forth. But it sounds like you're making this a new, an additional avenue that you're getting into.
Yeah, of course. I mean, the documentary, it got on to Netflix in December. I had no idea how much of a success it would be. Netflix had no idea. In fact, they turned us down twice before they finally were like, okay, it can be on Netflix. But after they saw the popularity behind it, we just met with them a few months ago. That's partially why we're in LA too, is to be closer to people who we really want to foster more of a relationship with. But we were just meeting with them a few months ago, and they're totally, on board to at least take a look at what we want to do next when it comes to video, and, basically gave us a door open to do that. And yeah, I think that video is kind of the perfect place to go right now, because you make things more tangible, I think, and give more real life examples with video. We're definitely heading down that road.
And you're going to have a studio, and you're going to, being able to do more production yourself then, right?
Yes. Yeah, we are working on getting a podcast studio. So our podcast studio right now is, we had an office in Missoula, Montana, at the university there. And it was a shared conference room where we'd have to set up these kind of makeshift mics, clamp up to the table and record these podcasts. But it was so janky, man. The sound quality comes across well, and I'm so amazed with what Sean Harding can do. We call him Podcast Sean. He produces our podcast. He does an amazing job with what he gets. But I literally remember one time we couldn't get this thing to clamp, so Josh is sitting there holding his mic as we're doing the podcast. So yes, we're trying to get a little bit better of a setup with that. So yeah, we just joined Patreon, and we are doing pretty well right now. I mean, we're very close to our goal where, if we hit that goal, we will get a podcast studio where we can have better quality. We can even set up video. So
on Patreon,
we can
people
even take live callers.
Yeah. So people can make a contribution on Patreon. They can pledge something. They just support, in this case, the studio, right?
Yeah, so Josh and I, we put out basically, we call them overtime episodes. We do one or two of those a week, and that is just for our Patreon fans and our Patreon supporters, I should say. And, it's a really cool setup where someone can give $2 per episode, and they will have access to content that not everyone else has access to.
Well, and you guys,
if any of your listeners want to join our, if they want to be a patron, that'd be awesome. They go to theminimalist.com/support, and they can totally find a link there to contribute.
Well, good. I hope a lot of people do check in and listen. And then you do have some big numbers. I mean, I want to circle back to the beginning and then wrap up, and that is, I bumped into you guys and got a chance to meet you and go to the party with you down in, when we were seeing the awards for the podcast. Then you were nominated for one of the top awards in the podcast categories at kind of the Academy Award of podcasters. And I think they were talking about that time of how many people listen to your podcast. I don't know if that's secret, but you've got some big numbers, I think.
No.
How many?
Yeah, man. I mean, numbers are just numbers, though, man, because, if it was 50,000 people listening to it or 1 million people listening to it, what matters to me is that it's creating a ripple and that it's really adding value to other people's lives. I want to say our average gets somewhere around 1 million, give or take 100 or 200,000.
That's a lot. And I'm not going to tell you my number now because it's not that, but I count Mariah as one of my listeners. So I'm happy about that.
You should, man. You should, man.
Hey, this has been great. I really appreciate your taking the time to have this conversation. Like I say, I'm a big fan. And I think we managed to stumble across some ways we overlap. Wrapping up, Ryan, if you're going to, any words of wisdom where you've got some people listening to this podcast that normally don't tune into The Minimalist, but what's your usual advice?
You know what, man, if there's one message that I want people to get from this whole journey, it would be this: love people and use things, because the opposite never works.
Boy, can't beat that. Brian Nicodemus, thanks for being on Farm to Table Talk.
Thank you, Roger. Take care, man. Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.